Welcome to The Fight with Teddy Atlas, presented by Dynamic Striking. I'm Ken Rideau, joined as always by the voice of all combat sports, the legend, Teddy Atlas. Teddy, quiet weekend.
Oh, yeah.
One of the more eventful fights we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I'm going to change my... It's done a lot for me. I'm going to change my approach to doing this show and doing, you know, everything that I do, Sam, in life from now on. I'm going to start drinking and going to the psychiatrist and and see if that, you know, gets me maybe, you know, better successes. You know, I've been pretty fortunate with my career, but maybe that will up my game a little bit if I start, you know, posting craziness every day, and you know, go talk to a couple of therapists, which we could all use. I'm not even being facetious here, and you know, take a shot every once in a while. You know, drink a beer before I go on the show. Matter of fact, give me that beer. Give me that. Let me have that beer. I want to have a beer before we start this show. It can already help my performance, I'm sure. And listen, yeah. It was so little to talk about that I'm not even going to do an introduction this week. I'm going to go right to the fights. And yeah, the only thing I'll do as far as an introduction is Passover is here. So happy Passover to our fans out there that Jewish, and that even if they're not Jewish, that obviously observed that holiday and that religious time. So let's go into the fights. And look, what would be a crazy weekend in boxing without first having a robbery? First, you got to have a robbery, right? You know, like when you do
a race.
At this
point, I'd be more surprised if there wasn't a robbery.
When you do a race, what do? You know, sometimes they shoot the gun off, right? The way you shoot off the gun in boxing for a big weekend, I just came up with this, for a big weekend in boxing is a robbery. You have a robbery, and then you say, okay, main event, up, let's go. We just robbed a kid named Macomb from Ireland. He came all the way over here to realize his dreams. He's a kid that was a 10-1 underdog fighting a number one contender who's undefeated. I think he was 29-0, 28-0, Barbosa, whatever it was. And we will just do like the old Kung Fu movies. That's what boxing judges do. They reach into the fighter's chest that won, and they pull his heart out. And with it, his dreams, his aspirations, his hopes for his family, all of it. And they wrap it up into a garbage bag, and they throw it off like trash. That's what they do.
And like you would say, right back to the back of the line to take more punches for the hopes that he could get back into this position to be. Let me set it up, and then I want to hear what you have to say. But McCombs, I thought he fought, to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, I thought he used his height really well. He stayed behind a stiff jab, kept the guy off balance. It looked like Barbosa, who I like, it looked like he just ran out of ideas. Like, I have no idea what to do with this guy. And every time Barbosa would start to get going, it seems like the McCombs would upset his timing and just hit him with perfect combinations. But it didn't seem like there was anything original. It was 1-2 right down the middle, left hand right down the middle. And he just couldn't miss him. And needless to say, when we get into the scorecards, one judge had it 98-92 for McCombs, and then the other two had it 97-93 and 96-94. I mean, 97-93 for one guy, 98-92 for the other guy. I don't know how these guys can go to sleep at night knowing that some of those rounds that they gave to Barbosa absolutely didn't go to him. But Barbosa gets the win and maintains his winning streak and remains the number one contender in the WBO. What'd you think?
Do you remember a while back, I guess it's been about a year, maybe less, where I did on our show something called the anatomy of a fixed fight. And this is another example of that. The 96-94 that they made it look like, you know, it was close for Barbosa, that is the setup. don't know if you ever saw that movie. Rob, put up the thing from that movie, The Sting, with Robert Redford and Paul Newman. It was a great, it won an Academy Award. It was about a couple of grifters that were on the street. They were con men, and how they would set somebody up for the con. And it was called, like I said, The Sting. This was like something out of The Sting. And that's what they do. That's how they set up you, the people that are getting stung, us, all of us, the fans. This is how they set you up. They make it a 96-94 close to Barbosa, like showing you that they're being fair, showing you they're being reasonable, showing you that, you know, they're being honest. And then they go and they pull off the Sting. They pull off the con. They pull off the robbery. 98-92 for McComb. Say, oh, wow, okay, wow, yeah, they got it right. And then 97-93, Barbosa. The Sting, they set it up to make you look and think that, oh, you know, it could have been either way, because you could understand how one guy could have an opposite of another guy, because the other guy had it close and they were trying to be reasonable. And you won't yell about it. You won't cry about it. And there's nobody to yell or cry anyway, because it's boxing. There is nobody to protect the fighters that got robbed. That's why I want a national commission. We have to get it out. You guys should vote. If you feel the way I feel, then go out there and, you know, vote by signing the petition that we have up there in the notes,
the show notes.
In the show notes. Go sign it. Because we haven't gone away. Me and my team of lawyers, we haven't gone away. Of great people, great. They also are big boxing fans. They care about the sport. They care about the fighters. We're going to Congress. We're just, you know, it takes time to get it done. But we're going to go to Congress and try to get a national commission that maybe can start to get rid of some of this stuff. Or at least get rid of these judges, hold them accountable when they do such stuff. Just horrendous. Again, these cowards who have never fought before, most of them, they go and they do what I said at the beginning. They just spit on the dreams, step on the dreams, trample on the dreams of these kids that come over here and try to change their life. I mean, McCombs came over there and he figured he changed his life. 10-1 underdog. He fought the fight of his life. You know, I'm sure Barbosa overlooked him a little bit. You know, I'm sure he wasn't quite ready. He's a 10-1 underdog. He figured it was going to be an easy night. And it was anything but. McComb, a southpaw, long, like you said. He's long, he's tall, he's got a long reach. He used that southpaw jab, controlled the outside, controlled range all night, kept you at the end of the punches, made it hard for Barbosa to get to where he had to get to. For Barbosa to win, he had to be on the inside. And when he did get in there, here's the thing that really won it for McCombs. Yeah, McCombs won it on the outside with his jab. He put combinations together in spots. He controlled the geography that made sense for him on the outside. But when Barbosa did get inside, he couldn't hit him. He couldn't catch him clean. You know, he didn't go to the body enough. You know, he didn't stay inside enough, Barbosa. He worked to get in, then he came out. He was very inconsistent with his offense. But when he did get in, McCombs was a slick southpaw.
Did you like how McCombs seemed to have just crazy head movement? He was slipping everything, so comfortable in the pocket. It was so nice.
He was slick. He was smart. He was elusive. He was what a good boxer should be. You know, and he should have won. He should have won. I mean, he made a miss on the inside. He controlled the outside. He even outworked him on spots on the inside and threw nice counters on the inside, which was Barbosa's game. Barbosa's game was on the inside. That's his game, to be busy, to apply pressure, to break you down. And that never happened because of the skill of McComb and because of the will of McComb. He came ready. He'd been knocked out. He had one loss. I don't know his record. I think it was 18-1. And his one loss, he had been knocked out. He had been stopped. And that's part of the reason why he was a 10-1 underdog.
Yeah, stopped early by Gavin Gwynn, stopped him back in February of 2021. Late in the fight. 7th round, 12th round fight, title fight.
On this particular night, he had it all working. Maybe he learned from that night. People do. Sometimes you got to lose to win. Maybe that night made him stronger mentally. It made him more, you know, resolved to what he had to do, aware of what he had to do. He said, damn it, this is going to make me better. I'm going to get better, and I'm going to get another chance. And when I get another chance, I'm going to be ready, more ready than I was this time. And he was. He was. The problem was the judges were too. They were ready to rob the guy that was fighting the house fighter, the promoter's fighter. That's what it was. I mean, it's not more complicated than that. That is, anyone sees it any differently, I don't know what to say. I really don't. Maybe you got to get your eyes checked by your ophthalmologist, or maybe you just wanted to see what you saw. You can't even say, oh, well, he was aggressive. He was aggressive sporadically, Barbosa, but not effective. Not effectively, he wasn't. So, at the end of the day, you know, matter of fact, I made a note. I don't know if you guys could read this. It's right here where this red star is. But I made a note during the fight. I take notes during the fight. It was round 8. And I had just... I wrote, Barbosa doesn't seem prepared for the ability and style of McComb. On the other hand, McComb came very prepared, knowing what he had to do, and he's done it. Round 8, they will probably rob McComb. McComb is in charge of this fight. His jab and his legs did the trick, and his combinations at the right time. McComb fought a brilliant fight, controlling distance and being in charge mostly all night long. And sure enough, I made that note in the 8th round. Sure enough, I didn't have to wait long. A couple rounds later, bang. Exactly what I said. They would probably rob him. And that's exactly what they did. So, there's nothing else to really say. One other thing I will say, if you have any doubt, if you want to argue with me, which I really, I don't see this as an argument, if you're going to be fair about what we watched and know what you're watching. But if you do want to argue with me, they do the live online betting. Can you see it? They put up there the live betting.
That's like the best barometer for what's happening in the fight. Where can you put your money? Not what's going to happen. What do you think looks fair?
Ken.
Court of public opinion.
Ken, so true. So that is going to be, as a lawyer in a courtroom, that will be my final piece of evidence. Because a 10-1 underdog, which is what McComb was, by the time they got to the last round, McComb, you ready for this?
Yeah.
On the betting line, the live betting, McComb was minus 4,000.
Can you imagine for the guy who put in a bet, even if you put in a $50 bet, and then to see the scorecards read, when you're like, oh, he's definitely winning this in the last round, and you're like, I've got this locked up. And then the judges come in with the same old crap. Man.
I just hope you didn't lay 4,000, that's all.
That's one way you'll get the attention of a national commission, is if enough people that bet on this fight start complaining that they're getting hoodwinked by the judges, then you'll see an uproar.
All right, talking about uproars, talking about all kinds of craziness.
Before we get into all the roaring that took place in the main event, let me give a quick shout out to our friends over at Athletic Greens. They've been with us from the beginning. If you use it, you know. If you don't, you're missing out. Athletic Greens is the all-in-one green drink. You take a scoop in the morning. It's an insurance policy for your body's health and immune system. It's got 75 whole food, made from 75 whole food sourced ingredients. It's got your vitamins, minerals, probiotics, prebiotics, basically everything that you need. Even if you're drinking beer and smoking weed before your weigh-in, your diet could still use some insurance. Make sure you get all the micronutrients that you need. Athletic Greens will provide just that. Go to athleticgreens.com/atlas to get 10 of these free travel packs with your first purchase. The travel packs go everywhere with me. They're super easy and convenient to use. athleticgreens.com/atlas. And before we get into the main event, Teddy, let me remind listeners, if you like what Teddy has to say and you want to hear more about his story, check out his book and his audio book available at audible.com. It's called Atlas, From the Streets to the Ring, A Son's Struggle to Become a Man, by the great author Teddy Atlas. All right, Teddy, let's talk main event. Man, what a show. I have so many questions. Is Ryan better than we thought? Is Devin Haney not as good as we thought? Does Devin Haney's chin look susceptible all night? I mean, we could go on and on, but no one really cares what I have to say about this. We want to hear what you think. Give it to me.
Yeah, first of all, I'm going to piggyback off what you said. Nice compliment about me being a great author. I'll tell you who's a great author. And we just had him on the show, and that will be up, but we'll be having that up. But we had an interview with Tom Hauser, who is a great author, a great boxing author. He's got some great boxing stories. He's been around a long time, and he's probably been, if not the best, one of the top boxing writers in this generation, for sure. So that is a really great author, but I appreciate you saying that, talking about my book. Look, first, before I start, about the Garcia-Haney fight. As always, be completely forthright, transparent. Mention when I'm wrong, which is quite a bit. I know there's fans out there that will be glad to, if I don't say it, they'll be glad to say it, but I'll say it before you. I always try to say it. I was wrong. I think I had a lot of company in this one, but that doesn't matter. I was wrong saying Haney would win, number one. And I also was probably one of the people out there saying it pretty loudly that he shouldn't be allowed to fight because of all the stuff he'd been posting, his behavior, saying that he was taken into the woods and forced by a cult to watch kids get raped, to saying his therapist is telling him it's good to take hallucinogenics, smoking weed on camera, you know, drinking a bottle of whatever he was drinking, of alcohol, beverage, at least we think it was. Did we all get hoodwinked? All right, that's going to be one of the questions. But with all of that behavior, yeah, I stand by it. I stand by whatever I say. And yeah, I didn't think he should be in the ring because I didn't think it was a put on, and I still don't. I didn't think it was a put on. I saw him. I saw the way he looked. I saw that he wasn't in top shape training, which was proven out because he couldn't. He was in good shape, but he wasn't in top shape. Otherwise, he could have made the weight. That was part of it. But look, he's on a weight program. He's strong. He's a bigger guy. All of that came out. I'd still like to hear about the post-fight or the pre-fight, post-fight drug testing. I'd like to hear about that because, not because I'm accusing him of anything, but Garcia was on camera, you know, doing things and smoking things 5 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it was before the fight, where you'd wonder if some of those things were still in the system. So that would be interesting. But look, I give him credit. I give him credit. I give Haney credit for showing a heart as big as the outdoors. I give him credit for that. Now, I will go and break down the fight in areas where I will not give people credit, where I will point towards things that I feel from my experience in the game, what was happening. My statement a minute ago, I'm going to explain it, where I don't think I was hoodwinked. I don't think that, as one of the announcers said, that he was as crazy as a fox. I'm not going along with that. I'm going along with your right to say it. And it's the obvious thing to say after somebody pulls off a surprising performance in the face of all the evidence we thought we had that was going to be anything but a surprising good performance. But I do think that he had problems, whether you want to call mental issues, whether you want to call them confidence issues, whether you want to call it issues that we all get when we're in a fearful situation, where we're in an anxious situation, a boiler place, when we're in a pressurized situation. We can break down. We can have problems. Remember, this kid wasn't far removed from being knocked out by Tank Davis and his confidence going down the toilet bowl and people saying he quit and all that. So I don't think he was in a great place. I think he's a good kid, basically, the core of him, but I think he's sometimes trying too hard to have a certain image that, I don't know, gets away from a little bit with the social media, with everything else that he's so good at. And look, he's smart. He knows, I guess he knows what he's doing. He's made a lot of money. He's a good athlete. He's obviously a good fighter. There was also a part in this where he had a familiarity with this opponent. They did fight 6 times, and they each won 3 in the amateurs. That, at the end of the day, that may have buoyed him. That may have helped him. That may have given him some solace, something to hold on to later on. But I'll say it again. I don't think that it was a put-on. I do think there were issues, mental issues, issues of him being lost, issues of concern. And I still think that. I still think that he's not out of the woods with that. And God bless him. God bless him. I just wish I admire and I appreciate anybody who believes in their religion. I have mine. I hope I keep it private. But you're entitled to talk about it, to handle it any way you want. That's the great thing about this country. But it's difficult when you do that in one breath, you know, praising the Lord, who I believe it. I believe in that. But I do it differently, privately. And that's okay however you do it. But then you go around and then you use, you know, language that just doesn't go with that. You know, that's right. That's difficult. But look, we're not here to do a course on proper behavior, proper etiquette in the world in that way. We're not here for that. We're here for boxing. We're here to break down a fight. And people are going to say, Teddy, how can you not admit that he didn't trick us all, or most of us, including you? Look, he trained, obviously. He was ready in the way that he needed to be ready. But there's a lot of elements here that I'm going to go through.
Well, one quick thing, though. If you say you train to be ready, the first thing you have to do to be ready, and there's no excuse for anyone at this level to miss weight, not by 3 pounds.
Well, I'm going to get to that.
Sorry,
I'm going to get to
that. That's egregious. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, but yes, you're right. But I'll get to that. Maybe it was on purpose. Maybe that was an advantage that made all the difference in the world. Maybe some people call it cheating. Maybe some people call it whatever. At the end of the day, he got in the ring, and what he didn't cheat about is the way he performed and the way he had to deal with what he had to do in that chamber of truth, that as difficult a place as there is on the planet other than actual war, other than where you're actually going to war and, you know, you make one mistake, you're getting shot in the head. You're dying. Other than that, this and obviously the UFC, the MMA fighters that go into the octagon, that is a couple of the toughest things and most pressurized and scariest things, quite frankly, that you can do. And with that comes luggage, comes baggage, comes pressure, comes fear. And those things can all act on us in different ways and just they can affect us in many different ways. We feel them. Some people handle them differently, better, but we all feel them. I believe that he was going through this turmoil. I believe that ever since the Tank Davis fight, that he was lost in his confidence of a fighter, of what he was, what he wanted to be, what he needed to be, of getting back into that ring. That he did have, you want to call it a meltdown, he had a struggle. He had a struggle. Believe it or not, it's not always to fight the fight. It's to get to the fight. I think that's where the trouble was and why we saw this. He was having trouble getting the confidence, getting it together, getting the belief system together. All of that, all of what is part of being a fighter, part of being anything in life that requires discipline, that is involved with confrontation, whether it's physical confrontation or emotional confrontation, getting on a stage for an actor or a singer or an actress to get on stage. That there's confrontation emotionally, and that could be a difficult battle to do, or go in the courtroom as a lawyer or whatever it is, go up on a stage as a comedian. Whatever that pressure is, whatever that fight is, whatever that battle is, it involves emotion. It involves controlling your emotions. And when they get out of control, it involves turmoil. I believe he was in turmoil. I would believe that he was in turmoil to get to the arena, to get to the moment. I'll say it again. That is harder than a fight. That getting to the courtroom as a lawyer to present your case, getting to the stage to sing your song, to perform your act, to do whatever it is, that can be more difficult than performing the act once you're there. Getting there is the problem. That's where I think inherently it started for Ryan, a kid who, I tell you, I've seen change with him. We all change. I've seen change with him, dramatic change, but I always liked the kid. I talked to him a few times on the phone. He called me, and I liked him. I didn't like the things that he was attaching to himself in the build-up, called promotion, called whatever you want. Some of that lewd stuff in the last press conference and some of the other press, that is not acceptable. That is not promoting. That is beneath us, beneath all of us, beneath him. I think that if you got him in an honest moment, he'd probably admit it. But that's beneath, that lowers things for all of us when that kind of behavior, that kind of talk, it's not trash talk. You know, it's not promotional talk. That is talk that none of us need to participate in it. That is perverse. And it lowers our sport. It takes away, it degrades our sport, takes away from it. But getting back to where he had, that he, what he was going through, I'm going to give you a precedent for this in a way that you never thought of. Mike Tyson, when he fought Holyfield had beaten him badly. The second fight had beaten him badly. In the 11th round, he stopped him. I was there for that fight. I had Michael Moore defending the world title that night, the same night Tyson was fighting Holyfield in the first time. And Holyfield gave Tyson a beating. And Tyson got stopped in the 11th round. The rematch was for $30 million, so you knew it was going to be a rematch. $30 million. Tyson started talking about he wasn't going to fight unless the referees were changed. He wanted to change the ref because the referee allowed Holyfield to butt him and, you know, all kinds of things. Holyfield's a warrior. But Holyfield's a guy that he was in there with his head like anybody else sometimes. I don't say purposely, but I'd be losing my credibility for myself if I didn't say that, yeah, Holyfield would be involved sometimes where there was some Billy Goating going on. And again, I don't think it was intentional. I think it was his style. He was in there. He was on the inside a lot of times. And, you know, it happens. And if it happened to him and he got the worst of it, hey, he dealt with it. You know, the problem is when it happens to someone else, they get worse of it. You're not feeling too good about it. So Tyson complained. And I guess you could wrap some legitimacy to it because of what I just said. Holyfield been involved in some Billy Goating fight. So he was saying, I'm not fighting unless the refs change. I remember thinking at that moment, and Jack Newfield wrote about it afterwards, the late great writer, that I had said before the rematch that I thought Tyson was trying to find a way to get through this fight, to get to the fight, because nobody wants to leave $30 million on the table. But and he had to get through it if he was continue fighting for his reputation. He couldn't avoid it. He had to do it, but it was hard. It was hard because the ghosts were twirling around in the attic. The ghost that could spook you, that could haunt you. The ghost of taking a beating for 11 rounds from a man who you couldn't intimidate, you couldn't knock out. So how, you know, Tyson's greatest thing is he intimidates. He's a tremendous fighter, of course, one of the great heavyweights. He's got speed. He's got power, power in both hands. But when you have those kind of tools and they don't work against somebody, you're lost. You could even become desperate. You could become scared. What am I going to do? Didn't work against him. And I think he was having a problem finding a way to get to the fight, to get to the arena, to get to the moment. And then he figured out one. You know, human instinct to survive is amazing. He found out he's got an innate intelligence. He's intelligent in other ways, but he has an innate intelligence, an instinctual intelligence. And his instinct worked for him. He said, I got to come up with an alibi here. First, I got to set the alibi that I'm worried about the ref. They got the ref to change. I'm worried about Holyfield's behavior. So they got the ref to change. And then he got in a fight and he had it set in his head. I think he found the way to get to the ring by thinking, if it does get really bad again, where I can't handle this guy, which he was fearful of, I will do something to get myself thrown out of the fight, to get myself disqualified. I will do something to get out so I don't have to go through what could be humiliation again. The humiliation of getting beat up. Just the thought of that made it hard for him to justify in his heart and mind how he was going to get in that ring, even for $30 million. So he came up with this scenario. If I have to pull the ripcord on a golden parachute to get me out of there, I have it. Now I can go in the ring. And sure enough, it got tough again. And he pulled the ripcord. And he got out of there. He bit his ear. Not once, but twice. Until Mills Lane finally stopped it. Because at first, Holyfield said, no, don't stop it. I'm still going to fight him, even with a half an ear. I'm still going to fight him because that's what Holyfield was. And I think that Garcia was in a similar place, not obviously different, but feeling the same pressures and doubts and making it difficult for him to get himself to the fight. So what did he do? So he started doing all this stuff we talked about already. I don't have to revisit it. You know, posting all this crazy stuff and all this turmoil. And all. Now, could part of it been that if things went bad, he had an excuse that he wasn't, that all this stuff was going, how could he be the top fighter? How's it possible to be the top fighter? How could we even expect him? You got people like Teddy Atlas saying he shouldn't even be in the damn ring. And Teddy was wrong. He shouldn't even be in the damn ring. How could we expect him to win this fight? I think that could be part of it, but I think even more, by getting lost in the fog of what he was doing, whether it was drinking, smoking weed, whatever, all these things and posting all this craziness, it allowed him to get into a place. Usually you don't want to be in a fog. No, who wants to be in a fog? You can't see right. I don't think he wanted to see right. Because if he saw right, he would have saw what was coming, a fight with a top fighter. And right now, he wasn't mentally ready to see that. So he got into a fog. And he stayed with that fog. I give him credit. He never pulled the ripcord and got out before the fight, though. But he had to get to that fight. And that was his way, whether you want to call it instinctual, human nature coming to his savior, human instinct coming to his savior, whatever you want to call it, just hear me out. It got him to the arena. Being in that fog, being in with all that stuff, all that turmoil and everything, which sometimes you could look at him and your eyes don't lie. You could see he wasn't really right. You could see it looked like he hadn't slept a few nights. You could see that there were certain things that maybe he wasn't doing right. But he was still training. He was still moving forward. He was still on that course. But what helped him stay on that track, on that course, was all of this stuff that normally would be the worst thing, would be completely to your detriment. But in this case, it was to save, it saved him. In this case, it was the vehicle that got him to Barclays Center in Brooklyn, to the ring. And once he was there, that's all he needed. That was the win. The biggest part of the win for him was getting to the fight. And that's the way I'm going to explain it. That's the way I believe it. That's the way. I mean, I don't have a degree in psychology, for anyone out there wondering. But let me tell you something. If you've been a trainer for 50 years in this business, and you're fortunate enough to have mentored underneath, you know, have had a mentor like Customato, and have, you know, studied for 7-8 years with a man like Customato, you don't need a degree, and you've been in the business with that many fighters going through the trials and tribulations that you go through in this business to develop fighters, and being in a ring myself as a fighter, you don't need to have a fancy certificate, credential to say that you know something about psychology when people are under pressure, when people are threatened, when people, you know, are in desperate situations and will do desperate things in desperate situations because they feel desperate. You don't have to have one of those diplomas. You have the real diploma, the diploma of life, the diploma of experience, the diploma of being there, seeing it, witnessing it. And that's what I'm going by. So once he got there, that was the win. That was the biggest battle. Get there. And now he got there, and now, I'm not going to say the easy part, but I will say the easy part compared to that part of the travel, I will say. And then what he got there, what's evident for Teddy Atlas? But for all of you, he was bigger, he was stronger, he was faster. And to Ken's point, he did not have to lose that last 3 pounds. You know that last 3 pounds, he came in 3.2 pounds heavy over the 140 limit. Do you know, now I know he's a smaller man moving up, but he's a big guy. So that last three pounds, he's big. You can see. And he looks so big. Oh, my God, he looked big. But that last 3 pounds that Haney did have to lose and he didn't have to lose, that can drain you. That's the three. It's not the first 10. It's not the first 20. It's not the first 8. No, it's the last 3. If you have problems with a weight cut, that's where the problems are. And he avoided that. He avoided that by not making weight. And that's why
I think Haney and his camp probably figured with, like us, the way he's acting, something's not right. I mean, a lot of people thought that he wouldn't even make it to the ring, including us. So they probably were like, 3 pounds, who cares? Well, we're going to kill him anyway.
Yeah, well, you're right. And I tweeted that. And I don't know if you read my tweets, but yeah, I put that out there. I tweeted that right after the fight that Rob put up for me. And that was part of it too. There's a lot of elements here that conspired against Haney and that worked for Ryan Garcia. And one of them, you have to start with the weight. You have to. Haney drained himself. He looked drained. You got to pass the eye test. I don't care about anything else. The eye test. Haney looked gaunt. His cheekbones were hollow. I've seen that look a million times. I know what it means. It means that you had a difficult, horrible weight cut. And yes, you can replenish. Yes, you can rehydrate. Yeah, you do all that. And he did all that. But it doesn't mean that you get back to 100%. Yeah, you get back. But when you don't have to do it, well, you get past 100%. Because you're already at 100 as far as your strength. And now, when you calculate in that you're even putting on more, and you, when it comes to, you know, to the night of the fight, and that the other guy is less, that is incalculable. That is where the big, big monster of an advantage can take place. And I think he had a monster of an advantage in that way. He still had to go fight. I give him all the credit in the world. I'm sorry, Ken. I just want to finish this one thought, and then you can jump in. But I just thought that, you know, he did what he had to do, Ryan. And I give him credit, everything else. But that's part of the deal. That was part of the reality. And then with that reality, with that is what you touched on and what I tweeted about after the fight, is that we're human. These guys are fighters, so you forget they're human, that they're subject to the same weaknesses we are, the same thoughts we are. You forget that sometimes. People take things for granted. They assume
that's a good
things.
Point.
And I do not doubt. I'm taking nothing away from Ryan. I applaud him. But I must say that it would be, I think, almost dumb on our part to believe that Haney and his father did not think, I'm going to steal a phrase from the great Floyd Mayweather, that did not think that this was going to be easy money. And when you start thinking that, you got a problem in this business, in any business. You, as a lawyer, you can't go to a courtroom and say it's going to be easy money. No, because the district attorney or the lawyer might be a lot better than you thought he was and have a great day. Or the judge might not like you and he might make your day even more difficult. So, and you got to overcome that. So you sure as heck better not have that seeping into your consciousness. You better not into your psyche. And I think it did sneak in there. They're pros, but I think that, yeah, they thought it was going to be easy money. They did think, yeah, we're going to get in there. We're going to go throw some punches and then go home, cash our check, and, you know, get ready for the next one. And 75% of this business, I always talk about it, is mental. And when you start to chip into that 75%, when you start to chip away at that 75% and it becomes you know, you become less than ready, less than that 75% ready from the mental side. And you're only 65%. You're only 55%. You're only 45%. You got a problem. Forget about the physical parts. I think he had two problems. The weight drain and the mental part of not being ready for what he was going to really be facing when he got into that ring on that night. Go ahead, Ken. You want to say it, and then I'll go on with it.
How much do you think the weight being drained made him susceptible to, like, made his chin susceptible? Because he looked like he was going down from every meaningful shots. I mean, he was on roller skates half the night. And talk about, I did see a tweet from you that he looked dry and he came in unprepared, and Ryan came out of the first round and caught him right away.
I didn't tweet that. I'll tell you what I did. Before the fight started, it was literally 5 minutes before the fight started, I sent a text to you, Rob, and my son, and a few other people. A couple other people. I sent the text out, and everybody,
I must have thought it was a tweet, but I remember you
Scouts
saying
honor,
that.
Scouts honor, okay, Sammy? Scouts honor.
Well, let it be noted that you definitely did say that, and I was like, oh, yeah, and Ryan jumped on him.
I said that just before the fight started, I said, Haney looks dry. This could be dangerous for him early. He could get hurt early because he's dry. And sure enough, 2 minutes later, whatever it was, he got hurt. But as far as the question on the chin, there's been questions about Haney's chin, about that he got hurt with Linares. He got hurt late in the fight with Linares. He got hurt he got dinged a little. And so there's always been a little bit of a question mark about his chin. What kind of chin did he really have when the day comes? So everyone's going to say his chin. And you make a beautiful point, a valid point. When you're dehydrated, when you're weakened, that can affect your capacity to endure. And part of that is your capacity to endure as far as taking a punch. It can impact that. But I'm going to go with, as I always do, with my own thoughts of not being influenced by anything but what my experience tells me, what my eye tells me. I'm going to give him credit for having a hell of a chin. Yeah, I know people are going
to... Especially to endure, to keep getting up. That toughness.
Go ahead, come at me. You want to come at me? You people out there, go ahead. I appreciate it. You're here. You're talking with us. I appreciate it. But I'm going to say, does he have a chin like Ali did? No. How many people do? You know, a chin like some of the great fighter, Jake LaMotta, or, whoever you want to pick. Pick whoever you want to pick. But no. But to be able to endure from a good puncher, a bigger guy, a big, strong, obviously tremendously better puncher than he was, to be able to endure that and get dropped three times. And look, some people say it was five times. I'm not going to argue with you. The referee didn't have his best night. I think he's a good ref, but he didn't have his best night. Okay? So I know people probably want to hear me about that. So maybe I'll touch on it more later, but for now, that's enough. There was a few things where he stopped Haney from punching on the inside. Then later on, he let him. He said he was hitting him in the back. Then later on, he decided it was fair. Go ahead.
That he changed up there and said, yeah, go ahead, crack him in the back if he's going to turn his back.
100%. And then he broke up the rhythm with that. And then there was another time where people could say he may have saved Haney because, he gave more time for Haney to recover when he separated and he warned them, and then he took a point away, which I understand. I mean,
I thought that point was valid. He punched him right in the face when the guy was saying break. I had no problem with that.
I agree with that 100%. But then there were other things. There was, there was times when he really allowed Ryan to grab a lot. They were both grabbing the spots, but Ryan was doing quite a bit of grabbing. He allowed that to go on, so you could probably have a problem with him over that, depending on how you saw the fight. You know, there was a couple issues where a couple of those, I said it already, a couple of the slips were falling down, could have actually been possibly ruled a knockdown, where instead of three, you might have had five, all of that. At the end of the day, I thought that Haney showed tremendous heart, resiliency, pride, you know, professional, you know, just a quality of behaving like a champion, refusing to be knocked out the best that he could. Again, you might say, oh, you know, some of these elements you just brought up, Teddy, saved him a little bit. Yeah, I'll tell you another thing that saved him a little bit. I thought Ryan probably should have stopped him, to be honest. But Ryan didn't do a great job of finishing. There were times where he had him hurt. I thought if he went to the body and placed a body shot, he would have froze him a little and might have got him out of there. There were times where he flailed, where Ryan just, you know, he was just flailing at punches when he had him hurt, trying to get him out of there. I get it. Where if he would have just sat down, he had him hurt badly. If he would have just placed his shots, if he would have just taken a little more patience, a little more time, and placed a shot to the body, an uppercut at the right time, although he did throw an uppercut one time at the right time, but if he would have placed his shots in a little bit more calmer way, maybe he probably does get rid of him. And I thought, again, I thought he probably should have in the opportunities that he had there. But to say that Haney has no chin, I don't think it's fair. I'm gonna defend that. And again, I'm going to say, I don't know how many guys would have survived with all the other things in the air that he got a little help from. But how many guys just would have survived and would have gotten up? How many guys would have allowed the count to get to 10? You know, so yep. Haney deserves credit for that. So I'm not going to go down that road and say Haney was a less of a fighter, less of a chin. That's what the what? No, no. Garcia surprised us.
One of the, either the second or the third knockdown was bad. Like, it looked like his arms were behind him. It's like he was kind of on his face as he rolled over. I thought, oh, he's not, I don't think he's going to get up. The fact that he got up and recovered and kept fighting, I think Rob even texted me and said, how is Haney still standing up? Because he looked really hurt for the first 5 or 6
That's
seconds.
That's all you need is what Rob just said. That's all you need to discount, to chase away the people that want to say he has no chin. How did he get up? That's all you need. And well put. And the other thing,
I wanted to ask you one more thing about Ryan not getting the finish. I thought at times Ryan seemed to doubt his own fitness. You know, when someone seems to let the guy off the ropes, I'm wondering if in his mind he's like, my condition is not great. If I go after him, I can easily punch myself out. I felt like he didn't really trust his conditioning enough to open up more when he did have him hurt. Well, that was the feeling I got, but curious what you thought.
No, let me answer that. I think you're on the money. I think that, first of all, as far as the scoring goes, I'm not going to get into the individuals. I'm just going to say this. Ryan won. But as far as the scoring goes, it was very strange fight. Now, I'm not talking about the scores being strange. I could see different people seeing it different ways. I can. And I'll tell you why. The rounds that Haney, simple, that he did not get hurt, he won. And the rounds that he got hurt, he lost. And he probably won more rounds where he didn't get hurt than he lost when he got hurt. Here's the difference. It's a point system. It's not a round system. And when you get dropped and hurt, it's a 10-8 round. And there was one round that could have almost been a 10-7. He was so badly hurt. So
Andy, they took a point on the 10-8, so one round was 9-8.
That's right. That's right. That changed it too, to make it closer in that kind of, you know, possible way. But the bottom line to what I'm saying is, the rounds that Haney didn't get hurt, he won. The rounds he got hurt, he lost. But the rounds he got hurt, he lost bigger.
Yep.
That was the fight. He lost bigger than the rounds that he won. So I think that there was a lot of elements. It couldn't have started better for Garcia, for his confidence, for him to say, I'm here and now I'm okay, than the first round hurting him. And the reason he hurt him was that Haney stretched a little bit with the jab. He reached a little with the jab, but what he did, his right glove dropped. And Garcia's best punch is his counter left hook. And he landed the counter left hook where the glove disappeared, where it dropped. He placed the left hook there on the tip of the chin of Haney, and it hurt him. And that changed the course of the fight too. That changed it in mentally, physically, emotionally. Because Haney did not, part of what I talked about earlier, where I think him and his father did think it was easy money. They did overlook him because of, I don't blame them in certain ways, but with all the craziness, like, this guy's crazy. We're going to go and we're going to get rid of him. We're going to go home. That's it. And then we'll go look at the calendar. We'll take a little vacation and we'll look at the calendar. And we'll figure out the next big fight. Problem is, when you think that way, sometimes funny things happen and something happened. And part of that attitude changed everything, I think, even before he got hurt, where Haney, rather than being Haney, I don't think it was Haney. And what I mean by that is, Haney is not what we saw. He's not a guy who walks people down. He's not a guy who walks in. I know he was a little more aggressive in the Loma fight and a Prograis fight, but still, he's not a guy that is a seek and destroy missile. He's not a guy who goes to knock you out. He fought in a way foreign from the Devin Haney that got there. He walked in. He was looking for big punches, drawn one at a time. He wasn't putting punches together. He wasn't using his jab even when he came forward. He wasn't using his jab, which is his best weapon, most important weapon. He wasn't using it to control range. He wasn't using it to set traps. He wasn't using it, as I touched on already, to set up some of his very accurate combinations. No. He was walking in looking to land one big shot. And the two reasons for that different Haney to show up, because again, that was an imposter. That was not Haney. That is not the approach Haney uses to win, to get to where he's gotten. But it was because that's what they thought they had to do, was just go in there and get rid of the guy. That was part of it. The other part is when he got hurt early. I think when he got hurt early throwing a jab, it dissuaded him from throwing a jab. It made him hesitant about throwing a jab. When he got countered with that hook, he said, oh, shoot, maybe I better not throw a jab too often. And I think it took him a while to shake that off. So I think that all of those things compounded together to create the nightmare that it turned out to be for Haney. And I'll go back to what you touched on about the conditioning of Garcia. Garcia fought sporadically throughout the night. Yeah, he had his moments where he almost knocked him out. But he had a lot of moments where he grabbed. He had a lot of moments where he turned his back, where he did that, whatever you want to call it, that poor man's version of a shoulder roll. I don't know what it was. But I'm not going to argue with what he did. He's smarter than me. He's smart. It worked. But at the end of the day, when you get down to the truth to what we watched. Garcia fought in spots. Now, those spots where he did fight, a lot of them you hurt the guy. A lot of them you almost knocked the guy out. But there were a lot of spots where he didn't fight, where he was moving around. He was biding time, killing time, surviving, whatever you want to call it, grabbing. But he was not throwing punches. He was not active offensively. And I think that there were two parts to that. I think part of it was what you touched on, that he did not have 100% confidence in his conditioning. How would he? I don't think he was in top condition cardiovascular-wise. He was strong, but cardiovascular-wise, no, I don't think he was. So that's why he slowed the fight down. He grabbed a lot. Yep. That's why he moved a lot.
That's what cost him the knockout win, I think. If he had confidence and opened up.
I think if he fought more steadily, yeah, in a more consistent manner.
Yeah.
But he couldn't, because he didn't believe he could. He believed that he had to save some gas, some petrol. And there's one other thing, and it's what I touched on in the opening. And I think the opening of this show, the part, was the most important part of it, how he got to the fight. But I think that he was not completely in the clear of making sure the demons didn't come. I think grabbing him and holding him and killing time, I think it helped him in that manner too. Yes, cardiovascular-wise, saving gas, but also in that way, where it helped keep the demons from coming to get him. The demons of doubt, the demons of, you know, of the possibility of negative thoughts. And because if he didn't do that, one of two things would have happened. Haney was behaving like he wanted to keep that title as bad as the night was. He was going to just keep coming. And Haney would have, in his mind, just said, okay, I got to break this guy down. And he would have just kept coming. And he either would have got knocked out, which is a possibility, because he came in reckless, Haney. There was a lot of times he came in so reckless that if Garcia had punched, he would have caught him. Because he was coming in from too far away, unlike Haney. Again, the antithesis of what Haney usually is, which is a buttoned up, solid technical fighter that does things the right way, in a patient, controlled way. He didn't do that. But if he didn't get knocked out, he might have broke down. He might have made a portal for those demons to come in, for those seeds of doubt to plant themselves on Garcia in his head. So I think that's a big reason why Garcia was slowing it down and grabbing him. Because otherwise, Haney had no choice. Haney, if he wasn't grabbing him, Haney would have been pushing him. And one of two things would have happened. Garcia would have started breaking down, or he would have caught him a punch again and hurt him again and maybe knocked him out. Here's the technical flaws of why Haney was getting hit. First of all, Garcia wasn't complicated. He hit him with the jab, straightened him up, and then hooked off it. Bop, 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 bop. One of the most basic combinations in boxing. Beautifully done by Ryan Garcia. It straightened him up, and then the right hand was a little low. Bang, he hooked off. That was one way. One way he caught. Another way was with the right hand sometimes, which Garcia, you know, isn't known for. He's known for the left hook more. But Haney kept laying his head on the wrong side, on the right side. You can't lay your head. I'm telling you what I teach. You cannot lay your head on the right side. When you lay your head on the right side and there's space, you're going to get hit a right hand because you're in the alleyway of the right hand. You must weave back or just stay on the left. On the left, you're outside. Here, you're outside the right hand. But when you're over here, here's the right hand. It's going to hit you. When you're over here, you're outside the right hand. On the left is where you need to lay your head. That was a technical flaw. Obviously, nobody corrected. He never paid a price for it before, but that's something that has to be corrected in the gym. It was never corrected. So that was one of the reasons why he kept getting him right hands. Now, look, you can do that wrong and lay on the right side, Ken, but you know what you have to do? You got to close the gap. You got to get in close so there's no room to throw the right hand. Then you're okay. But to lay on the right side with space, with room, no. And he got hit with right hands. He got hit with right hands doing that. And so those were a couple of the technical flaws. I can't think of the other ones. There was a couple others, but those were a couple of the major ones. At the end of the day, bigger, stronger, faster. And I tell you another thing. It's a funny thing, but I tell you another thing that worked against Haney that really normally would work against the guy doing it. But in this case, it sabotaged Haney. It helped lead to his demise. And what that was what I touched on earlier, and you touched on, about how sporadically Garcia fought, how inconsistent his offense was. There were rounds where it went 2 minutes without a punch, a minute without a punch, 40 seconds, whatever it was. There were spots there that were dead spots where there was no punching. And it looked like, okay, Haney's back in this fight because after he got hurt a little, he won a bunch of rounds. He was back in the fight. He was winning the fight. But then all of a sudden, bang, he got hurt. And then the late rounds was all downhill. But before that, yeah, he was back in the fight because there was only one guy throwing punches. There was only one guy fighting. It was Haney. But I'm going to tell you, that sporadic, inconsistent punching and offense of Garcia that was getting him behind in the scorecards, maybe, I'll tell you where it was serving him. I'll tell you where it won the fight for him in some ways. It made Haney, and probably his corner, his father, but more importantly, it made Haney get a sense of false security to start to think, he's not going to punch. And then when he punched, he caught him by surprise. Now, I know people are going to say, Teddy, you're not supposed to be a professional top fighter and get caught by surprise inside that square. So, I get it. But we're human. It happens. When a guy ain't throwing punches for long periods of time, yeah, sometimes you get reckless. You get careless. You get a false sense of security. You think, okay, he's not going to punch now. I'm going to do this. Bang! He suddenly punches where he hasn't punched for a minute. You get caught by surprise. That worked for Garcia. That hurt Haney. His lack of consistency offensively by Garcia actually worked for him. Because then when he did pick it up, Haney never expected it in spots. And you can see it. You can see that he didn't expect it. So I think there was a myriad of things, of different elements floating around that night in Brooklyn that all conspired against Haney and worked for Garcia. It was a crazy, you know that old joke, don't try this at home. I don't suggest to anybody they try what we saw. And then they try to duplicate it. No, no, no. But I think that I did the best job I could to explain what it was. Because to me, that was my job today. To try to explain, it don't mean that I'm right. I believe I am, but don't mean I am. But to give an idea to people out there, to give an explanation to explain what happened. To explain, and like I said, I tell you, sometimes when I try to explain what happens, I start with thinking, what did not happen? And what did not happen was what one of the commentators said, crazy like a fox. No, no, no. I know at the end of the day, it looks that way, and he was, I guess, but I think that there was real stuff attached to this behavior. And I explained it already. Go ahead, Ken. I'm sorry.
I think one of the biggest takeaways, if I'm in Ryan Garcia's camp or Ryan Garcia fan, I think that there's two things that you can change immediately and get even better than even better performance than what he put in against Haney. Conditioning. I think if he was in better condition, he would win by knockout. And number one, and number two, focused. At one point, his trainer had to scream in his face to not stop clowning around when he thought he had him hurt. I want to say maybe around the 10th, 11th round, he came back to the corner and the trainer had to give him a lecture and tell everyone else to shut up while he talked to him because Ryan was like excited that he had the guy hurt. But those two small things that are well within his control have nothing to do with his talent or ability would make him so much better. And those things are right within his control.
This is where I agree and disagree with you. And I know that's hard to do, but I could do it. I disagree. He couldn't do that. He couldn't be that consistent guy because he didn't believe he was that guy. Yeah, now he's fair. At a place where he's got his feet on something other than just air. Because they were on air. He was grabbing. He was looking for solid ground, the kid. He was. I felt bad for him. And I do. I'm not ashamed to say it. I did. I felt bad for some of this stuff early on. I was worried about him. But look, he did what he did, and I give him credit for it. But at the end of the day, that's the best way I could describe that he was looking for solid ground, and now he's found some. And now, to your point, now, not before, he couldn't do it before. Because he didn't have his feet on the ground to do it. But now that he's found this, he's got this victory, he's got this success, he's done this, he's got this monkey off his back, if you want to say, with the pressure and with the
you
doubts.
You can see the relief after the fight. Yeah. You can see a different personality.
Now he could possibly be that guy. Now, I don't know if he will. I don't know if he will. But now he possibly could be that guy. And after winning, I give him more props. After winning through everything he went through and put us through, the theater of everything, now he's big. Now he really is big. That was the one thing. He was either going to become non-consequential, he was either going to become not relative, disappear into the air, or he was going to come through and do what he did and be big. Like being an enigma. He's an enigma. He's really, he now, and one other thing I'll touch on. For the people who said it was a great fight, I'm going to argue that it wasn't. This is what I'm going to say. People are saying, Teddy, it was a great fight. All right. That's your opinion. Here's mine. I think it was a very interesting night. Even a great night in some ways, if you will, when it was all said and done. I won't argue that, but not a great fight. This is what I say. It was theater. It was it was drama at its best. It was drama and theater at its best. And it had your attention from the beginning to the end. It had your attention right from the beginning when the unexpected was all of a sudden happening, where everyone thought, most people thought this was going to be some kind of crazy train wreck. We're just going to see when the train comes off the track, is it going to be this round, going to be that round? And we're watching to see, and all of a sudden, seconds into the fight, minutes into whatever the time was, Garcia hurts him. And then we're like, holy smokes, holy smokes. And then it became a great fight, a great night. Because now we are seeing something we didn't expect. Now we have theater. Now we have drama. And once you have that, you have everyone's attention. But to be a great fight, you'd have to have more consistency in the offense during rounds. You'd have to have less grabbing. You'd have to have less of the referee with the crazy stuff back and forth, getting a little sloppy here and there. You'd have to have less of that. I'm not arguing with the fans who are still going to say Teddy was great. It was great. Those elements made it great because it was unexpected theater. The most unexpected thing you could ever imagine. So that made it must watch every minute.
Sorry, there's a bunch of elements I want to talk to you about, things that happen after the fight. But before I do, I just want to give a quick shout out to the dynamic striking. If you like what Teddy has to say here about the different techniques, punches, you can learn it all from the master himself at dynamicstriking.com. Go to dynamicstriking.com, search Teddy Atlas, and there's, what do you got now, 20 videos up there?
18, thank you.
18 videos all covering every technique in boxing.
And what did we just talk about? You're going to finish, but one thing. We talked about the mental part. It doesn't have to be in boxing. Wherever it is, whatever your vocation, whatever you're trying to do, whatever fight you're trying to win, whatever battle you're battling, the mental part, to be together, to have the discipline, to control your emotions, to be more confident, to just be more, you know, and control of yourself. I did 15 of them are all on technique, on all the technique you need to be a top fighter, really. And I know that's very braggadocious of me to say, but I really think they are. I'm sorry if I come across that way, but I believe in these, that they really are, and other people do. And that's what makes me feel like I can believe in it, because other people have said it, other fighters have said it, even MMA fighters. But three of them I dedicated to the mental side, just the mental side. And one of them was to anti-bullying, how to deal with bullying and what bullying was really about for the poor kids that get bullied, what's really going on and what they have to understand. But the mental side of a fighter, how you can be more sure of yourself, how you can get more confidence, how you can be braver, if you want to go put it in a simple way like that. Anyway, I'm sorry. I just want to say.
No, that's all I had. So go to dynamicstriking.com, and if you're going to box, please look the part and check out Teddy's Box Raw sports apparel collection at boxraw.com. He's got the 36 collection, 36 minutes to make life fair. Give that a shot at boxraw.com. Teddy, I think it's true. Ryan Garcia said that he bet $2 million on himself and won an extra $12 million on the fight. He posted a bet slip, claims he did. That's a hell of a statement if he really did bet $2 million on himself.
I wonder, I mean, look, if he did, hey, more power to him, but Do we know for a fact that it's a legitimate bet slip? I don't know.
I guess we don't.
There were so many things this night that we don't know what we were seeing. You know what
that's
I mean?
Right.
It's like you walk away, Sam, saying, wait a minute, what did I see? Did I see that? Was that a mirage? Wait a minute, let me clear my eyes. Let me slap myself in the face. Well, what the hell did I just see? So I don't know. But look, fighters have done it in the past. Floyd Mayweather has done it plenty of times. You know, where he bet on himself, and he obviously collected. He never did not collect, because he's always won. But hey, if he did, look, just a additional, a little addition to a great night for him.
Some of the things that weren't a mirage that I did see, let's go through some of the crazy ongoings. At the end of the fight, as they were reading the cards, Bernard Hopkins was mocking Bill and Devin, saying "Allah Akbar," like in a mocking tone, which I thought was a bit classless. I mean, what the religion talk?
No,
I think there's no place for it.
Yeah,
if you did that in another major sport,
for
you'd be kicked. You'd be suspended for a long time if you tried that in the NFL, MLB, NBA.
There's no place for that stuff. I don't. Well, I didn't even know about it. When was that? Before or after?
In the ring when they were announcing the fight, Bernard on camera is yelling at Bill and Devin, "Allah Akbar," you know, kind of in a mocking tone. And Bernard got into it at the weigh-in, pushing and shoving, which always seems to me like the most childish behavior, especially when the trainers are into it.
Ken, this is what I'm going to say to that, to all of it. There were a lot of things, or a few things, that we as a fraternity of boxing people, a community, a family of boxing people, there was a bunch of things leading up to this fight that we can't feel proud of, we can't feel good about, that are detrimental to the sport at all times. At all times, then that's not good. It's not good. But at the end of the day, there was one good thing that was really good for the sport, and it was the way that these two fighters fought in the ring. That was good for the sport. And that's always good for the sport. And that's always the most important part. Let's try to keep it to that as much as we can.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, some of the other stuff that we're talking about, I saw Eddie Hearn and Ryan Garcia's dad got into it backstage screaming and yelling, and then they apologized to each other, which I thought was funny. And but they talked about, Eddie said to him, I got Jerron Ennis ready for you next if you're ready. And then all of a sudden Ryan's dad came back, apologized, and was shaking hands like, okay, we're ready. It'll be interesting to see where he goes from here, because I think that, you know, if you take that Tank performance out of the equation, I think Ryan's stock is even higher than it is now. Because, but then again, he was so weight trained for that fight. In hindsight, I mean, you just look at the image of him in the ring. I saw someone put a side by side of him in the ring for the Tank fight versus this fight. It looked like two different people. And yeah, I think that after he got stopped by Tank, a lot of people dismissed him. And like you said, had he not won this fight, he could have been Mr. Irrelevant. But now he wins, he's back. I mean, what's the ceiling for this kid? Like, where do you think he goes from here? Who would you like to see him fight next? He's talking about moving up to welterweight. I don't think anything below 140 is even a remote consideration. But I could see him going to 147. What do you think?
I think the world is his.
That's for sure.
The world's his right now after what he went through and what he proved wrong to a lot of people. And, you know, I think that, you know, he gets to choose. He gets to choose, and his people get to choose. I'm curious to see how the relationship now, if it stays good, because it was very bad with him and his promoter. And then
that's what
for
I
this
was gonna
fight,
get to next.
It became very good. And you could understand why, because the kid, and that's where you felt bad for him, the kid was in such a perilous place. He was in such a difficult, lost place that he needed companionship. He needed somebody to you know, to be there. And he was willing to be friends with anybody who was near him to feel security, just to feel, you know, safe in an emotional way, not a physical way, an emotional way, to feel safe. And you could see he was vulnerable. And during that vulnerable time, all of a sudden you saw a change where, you know, he grabbed onto Oscar. He grabbed onto, I think, anyone with him. But one of the ones that we saw on the video store we saw was that during this stage, during this moment, he grabbed onto Oscar. And all of a sudden, their relationship took a 360-degree turn, you know. And I wonder, it was brought on by these dire situations, this dire situation. It was brought on by this abnormal situation of stress, of him being, feeling that, you know, maybe he was alone in some ways, being in the state of mind he was in. Now that he got through this, and I hope he's okay. I hope, I do. I hope that he continues to, because I still think that he, whether it's to talk to people, the right people, whatever, but I just hope he's okay after this. I hope he had a great win, but I hope he has the greater win of being happy in life and knowing that he could find himself in life and be safe in life in those ways. I hope the kid is. I do. But now it's going to be interesting that he got past, you know, this stressful situation that can really create relationships in stress like that. It could ruin relationships, but it could create them. I think it created a relationship for him and Oscar. Now it's going to be interesting. Does that relationship stay the same now that he got past this moment? Or does it change again? It's going to be interesting. And I think another thing worth pointing out too, Ken, is that we all talked about the craziness, the stress, the craziness, all the stuff that Ryan was going through and that we were focused on. But we were never focused on anything with Haney, because Haney was a pro. Haney was supposed to win the fight. Haney, you know, there was a time when it got so crazy where I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the betting numbers were like, Haney was like minus 1,500 or something, or 2,000 or 1,200. It got to the stratosphere. It got to really crazy, because when it first opened, it was like an even fight. And then all of a sudden, with all the stuff going on, Haney was like minus, you know, over 1,000. And so nobody thought about Haney, what he's going through. You know, he's just going to go and collect, and collect his money. And how, I think it's fair now to say, him and his father were going through things they never went through before either, all this that we didn't think about. We only thought about how it would impact, you know, Ryan. But how did it impact Devin going through all this? Like, you think that the fight's not going to happen. You think that the guy's crazy. You think that it's going to be an easy night. You think, you know, that obviously that affected him.
And that stuff, all that stuff with the press conference and the craziness, it doesn't seem to sit well with Devin. He's never seems comfortable with it. He just wants to get in there, at least from the outside looking in, from my perspective. He just seems to want to take care of business, and all these shenanigans makes him very uncomfortable. At least that was how it looked to me. But you're right. Where does he go from here? But if there's any silver lining for him, he maintains the title. He's still the champ because Ryan missed the weight, so the butt title wasn't on the line. Not that it means much these days, but small consolation in that when they're negotiating for the next fight, he still does retain his title, which will matter in future fight negotiations.
No, 100%. Definitely. I think that... You have any other stuff you want to touch on? Because I think this is a good episode.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, where do you think, so what do you think's next for Ryan? Who would you like to see him in with next if you had your druthers?
Oh, boy. You know, that. I mean.
Jerron Ennis, 147?
That's not happening. And that's not happening because I'm not even going to get into there, or Ryan's afraid, or he's not. It's not happening for the same reason it ain't happening with who I think is the best fighter in boxing in every way, Crawford. Him and Inoue, they're both the best. But and Tank Davis is close. But I think Inoue and Crawford are the two top guys. But Ryan Garcia and Ennis is not happening for the same reason why Crawford and Ennis is not happening. Ennis, as good as he is, as good as we think he is and think he could be, and as big as he is, as young as he is, as skillful as he is, as technically sound as he is, and I think he's sound mentally as well as technically and physically. With all of that said, he isn't known enough. He is not big enough. His star is not bright enough yet. Yet, he doesn't have that signature win or two signature wins to be able to bring the money that it would take to fight either Garcia or Crawford to make the risk worth the make the reward worth the risk. Right now, the risk of fighting a guy like Ennis is too great. It's much greater than the reward. When the reward becomes greater, then you could possibly talk about those fights.
That's a good point. Anyone at 147, you'd like to see him step up if he were going to go to welterweight?
I mean, you know, that's interesting. The welterweights have cleaned out a little bit.
Yeah.
He could fit in there somewhere and win a welterweight title, yeah. Because a lot of the welterweights have moved out. I mean, Crawford moved out. You know, obviously, I think Ennis might be moving out. He might have to move out. Now, I don't know that it's because of difficulty making weight. I think he's a big guy, though. I think because to get somebody to fight him of a fight of consequence. He might have to move out. I don't have the rating. Do you have to give me the ratings in the welterweight right now? But I think it's open territory for somebody like Ryan.
All right, welterweight. Obviously, we got Crawford number one, Spence number two, then Jerron Ennis at number three, and then you got Mario Barrios, Cody Crowley, Conor Benn, David Avanesian, Giovanni Santillan, Romain Villa.
Obviously, Conor Benn is a big fight across the pond, you know, in
23
England.
23-0.
Yeah, that's a big fight in across the pond. Some of those other names could be very interesting. You know, Barrios is a guy that used to be at a lower weight class. You know, he got knocked out by Tank Davis too. He came up. I love him, the former champion. I love him. I love his attitude. I love the way he fights. He's a fan-friendly fighter. He's not a huge puncher. What were some of the other names you threw in there, you mentioned?
After Cody Crowley, who's 22-0.
No, before that, the top ones again.
Oh, sorry. It was Crawford, Spence, and Ennis, and then Barrios.
Yeah, like I said, Crawford is gone.
Yeah.
Right? Ennis might be gone, but that doesn't make sense from a business standpoint. Who was the other one, the third one?
It was Crawford, Spence, Ennis, Barrios, and then number five is Cody Crowley, and then Conor Benn was number six.
Yeah, you got a bunch of them that could be a world title fight. But I'll tell you, here's a crazy one. I don't know that he's going to stay, though, at welterweight. He might move out of there. But here's an interesting one. Really interesting. Spence. Because we don't know what Spence is. We really don't. I mean, Spence was one of my favorite guys. But after the way he got, treated against Crawford, the way he lost, and then you can start thinking about the car accident, did that affect him? You know, all of that, everything. He hasn't fought since. We don't know what is there right now. We don't yet. And sometimes you never recover physically or mentally from a fight like he had with Crawford. That kind of, destructive beating that he took. Just destruction.
Yep.
Being taken apart. So we don't know. That would be, I don't know, that would be interesting. Because you start thinking, oh boy, if Spence is the way he used to be, and Garcia's moving up, and Spence is a big welterweight.
He's huge.
Is it possible that he could carry the power and he could do like he did? So there's a lot of, again, it's like, remember Tony Montana and Scarface when he up in the sky, he looked up and he saw the blimp and it said, "The world is yours." Kind of the world again. I said it earlier. The world is his. Garcia is right now for his choosing.
Well, before we say goodbye, let me remind the listeners of the Dr. Atlas Foundation doing good work for people in need. If you're feeling charitable, please consider the Dr. Atlas Foundation as your charity of choice. Teddy does a lot of great work for the people of Staten Island with the charity and all over the world. But you can see that at the Dr. Atlas Foundation. You got anything else, Teddy, before we say goodbye?
No, I think we said enough. And I also do a show called Pro Box. I'll just throw out that with two former great people and very smart boxing people. Paulie Malignaggi and Chris Algieri. I do a show with them too that I think you would probably enjoy. But I enjoyed this episode, Ken. I think it was. I hope the people enjoy it. That I always hope the people enjoy it. I hope they enjoy this and what we try to deliver to them. I hope we delivered it.
Yep, and I would say if you do enjoy it, please do us a favor and subscribe to the YouTube show. It helps us immensely. And as always, we appreciate you guys for being with us, and we'll be back next week with all the action from this coming weekend. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks, Teddy.